us people are just poems. We're 90% metaphor, with a leanness of meaning approaching hyperdistillation. And once upon a time, we were moonshine, rushing down the throat of a giraffe. Yes, rushing down the long hall, despite what the PA announcement says. Yes, rushing down the long hall, down the long stairs in a building so tall that it will always be there. It's part of a pair. There on the bow of Noah's Ark, the most prestigious couple just kicking back, parked against a perfectly blue sky on a morning beatific in its Indian summer breeze. On the day that America fell to its knee after strutting around for a century without saying thank you or please. And the shock was subsonic and the smoke was deafening between the setup and the punchline, because we were all on time for work that day. We all boarded that plane for it to fly. And then while the fires were raging, we all climbed up on the windowsill, and then we all held hands and jumped into the sky. And every burrow looked up when it heard the first blast, and then every dumb action movie was summarily surpassed, and the exodus uptown by foot and motor car looked more like war than anything I've seen so far. So far. Fierce and ingenious, a poetic specter so far gone that every jackass newscaster was struck dumb and stumbling over, oh my God, and this is unbelievable, and on and on. And I'll tell you what, while we're at it, you can keep the Pentagon, you can keep the propaganda, you can keep each and every TV that's been trying to convince me to participate in some prep school punk's plan to perpetuate retribution. Perpetuate retribution. Even as the blue toxic smoke of our lesson in retribution is still hanging in the air, and there's ash on our shoes, and there's ash in our hair, and there's a fine silt on every mantle from Hell's Kitchen to Brooklyn, and the streets are full of stories, sudden twists and near misses, and soon every open bar is crammed to the rafters with tales of narrowly averted disasters, and the whiskey is flowing like never before, as all over the country folks just shake their heads. So here's a toast to all the folks that live in Palestine, Afghanistan, Iraq, El Salvador. Here's a toast to all the folks living on the Pine Ridge Reservation under the stone cold gaze of Mount Rushmore. Here's a toast to all those nurses and doctors who daily provide women with a choice, who stand down a threat the size of Oklahoma City just to listen to a young woman's voice. Here's a toast to all those folks on death row right now, awaiting the executioner's guillotine, who are shackled there with dread and can only escape into their heads to find peace in a form of a dream. Peace in a form of a dream. Peace in a form of a dream. Cause take away our PlayStations and we are a third world nation under the thumb of some blue blood royal son who stole the Oval Office and that phony election. I mean, it don't take a weatherman to look around and see the weather. Jeb said he'd deliver Florida, folks, and boy, did he ever. And we hold these truths to be self-evident. Number one, George W. Bush is not president. Number two, America is not a true democracy. And number three, the media is not fooling me. Because I'm a poem heating hyperdistillation, and I've got no room for a lie so verbose. Yeah. Yes, I'm looking out over my whole human family, and I'm raising my glass in a toast. Here's to our last drink of fossil fuels. May we vow to get off of this sauce. shoo away the swarms of commuter planes. Find that train ticket we lost. 'Cause once upon a time, the line followed the river and peeked into all the backyards. And the laundry was waving and the graffiti was teasing us from brick walls and bridges. We were rolling over ridges, through valleys, under stars. I dream of touring like Duke Ellington in my own railroad car. I dream of waiting on the tall, blonde wooden benches in a grand station aglow with grace, and then standing out on the platform and feeling the air, the air, the air on my face. Give back the night, its distant whistle. Give the darkness back its soul. Give the big oil companies the finger, finally, and relearn how to rock and roll. Yes, the lessons are all around us, and the truth is waiting there. It's time to pick through the rubble, clean the streets, and clear the air. Get our government to pull its big dick out of the sand of someone else's desert. Put it back in his pants with the hypocritical chants of freedom forever. 'Cause when one lone phone rang in 2000, and one at 10 after 9 on 911, which was the number we all call when that lone phone rang right off the wall, right off our desk and down the long hall, down the long stairs in a building so tall that the whole world turned just to watch it fall. While we're at it, remember the first time around? The bomb, the rider truck, the parking garage, the princess that didn't even feel the pee. Remember joking around in our apartment on Avenue D? Can you imagine how many paper coffee cups would have to change their design following a fantastical reversal of the New York skyline? It was a joke at the time. And that was just a few years ago, so let the record show that the FBI was all over that case, that the plot was obvious and in everybody's face. And scoping that scene religiously, the CIA, or is it KGB, committing countless crimes against humanity with this kind of eventuality as its excuse for abuse after expensive abuse, and they didn't have a clue. Look, another window to see through. Way up here on the 104th floor. Look, another key, another door. 10% literal, 90% metaphor. 3,000 some poems disguised as people on an almost too perfect day. Must be more than pawns in some asshole's passion play. So now it's your job, and it's my job to make it that way, to make sure they didn't die in vain. Shh, baby, listen.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Acts of Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. Today's debate is, would the world be better off without religion?
Our motion is, the world would be better off without religion. This is a debate from Intelligence Squared US. We're at the Skirball Center for the Performing Arts at New York University. I'm John Donvan. We have two teams of two arguing out this motion. One team, they make the argument that religion has been a burden for mankind, that it imprisons the minds of those who participate in it, keeping them within a narrow range of ideas, discouraged from thinking, and also that religion divides us historically in ways that have had terrible consequences. The team arguing against the motion that the world would be better off without religion, who are saying explicitly the world would be better off, is better off with religion, they are arguing that a world without religion would be a very, very bleak place, in part because of the absence of the sorts of goods that manifestly are carried out in the name of religion around the world. We're going to go on to round two now. This is the round where the debaters address one another. Now, I want to start with the side arguing that we would be better off without religion. What does it say about the many billions of humans who embrace religion that they do so, given your argument that it is destructive to them? And Anthony Grayling?
Religion is pervasive in history, and it's traditional, and it's handed down from parents to their children, so it remains the case that it's a very potent force in society. But if you look at the trend in the developed and advanced and educated countries of the world since the 17th and 18th century, enlightenment and the growth of science, you see the numbers are plummeting. Plummeting even here in the United States of America. You look at the Pew polling data, and it points out to us that the number of people who self-identify as not having a religious commitment, or agnostic or atheist, is increasing all the time, especially among the young. So the trends are setting in the right direction.
All right, let me take that to the other side. And the argument made by Anthony Grayling and also earlier by Matthew Chapman is that religion kind of gets kids early, and then it's set. I want you to take that point on.
Sure. Remember, we also get kids early with habits like brushing your teeth, learning the mathematical tables. Now, here's the point. I think that as a practical matter, we all learn our ethical values from our parents. I learned what I would call crayon Christianity from my parents. But the fact of the matter is, that's my parents' beliefs. When I became a teenager, when I went to Dartmouth, that set of beliefs got battered. And crayon Christianity became no Christianity at all. Just to say we learned it from our parents misses the thrust of why billions of people in the world continue to do it long into old age. In other words, religion delivers practical benefits. It gives us the hope of life after death. That's a practical benefit. Second, religion is a mode of transmission of morality. You might say there is morality that comes through Kant or Nietzsche or Heidegger, but no one teaches their kids morality that way. People learn their morality as Hindus.
Let me bring it over to Matthew Chapman and bring him into this, and if you can respond to some of what you've heard here.
Well, I just think it's a distortion of what you actually see in life, which is you see people who grow up in cultures. They become addicted to their particular religions. They disagree with all kinds of other religions. Even you disagree with, you started as a Catholic, you end up as an evangelical. I think all of this is, frankly, delusional. And that even if you could remove all of the bad things about religion and keep all of the good things in religion, none of which can't be performed by people who don't believe in God, because they can, and you ended up with a character who was like Father Christmas and a nice, harmless sort of person, would you want to find out that the President of the United States was a devout believer in Father Christmas? Not me.
All right, let me take this. Let me take this to... I want to take it to David Wolpe, because the issue of this of whether there's a credulity here that people believe suggests that people's minds aren't growing.
So I want to say, first of all, it's so interesting that the side that's quoting the Bible is that side, and the side that has actually provided evidence of any kind is this side. The idea that people who are religious because of some psychological deficit, but people who are not religious because they reason their way to the lack of religion, not only slights the idea that religious people are capable of thought, but also tries to sort of railroad you into this belief that you should condemn it without actually looking at all the statistics, the ideas, the history that we cited. And that sort of slighting of the religious belief makes me think that your argument might not be as sound as you think it is.
I'm afraid the thing is that most people are brought up in a religious tradition, and those people who escape religion do it because they look at the facts, they look at the evidence, they look at the morality, and they recognize that there is something very divisive and very distorting here. Look at small children in kindergarten, all races and ethnicities and backgrounds and classes and religions. They don't know that. We have to work very, very hard to divide them and tell them what tribe they belong to and what religion they belong to, and that's where the source of the trouble comes in.
All right, Dinesh D'Souza.
From division.
Dinesh D'Souza to respond.
I think the deeper point here is this. The religious guy and the non-religious guy are both responding to the world as it is. Charles Darwin became an atheist not because he discovered evolution. It wasn't facts. It was when his daughter Annie died. And Charles Darwin said, if there's a hell, lots of the lovely people I know would be in it. I can't bear that kind of a doctrine. You, Matthew, in your article in Slate Magazine, talked about nuns or teachers who beat you on the ankles and people who stuck their hands down your pants. My point is, in many cases, we're not dealing with facts. We're dealing with wounded theism. Many times when we hear the word atheism, we're dealing with a person who is angry with God, or angry maybe with the representatives, the self-appointed representatives of God.
Hear great speeches and interviews at Access Sacramento every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m. or go to greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
If they blow up. hole in my backyard. Everyone is gonna run away, and the creeks won't flow to the great lake below. Will the water in the well still be okay? If they blow a hole in the backbone, the one that runs across the muscles of the land, oh, we might get a load of stone for the road, but I don't know how much longer we can stand. We'll need to build some new apartments, and I know we're gonna have to fix the roads. But if we blow another hole in the escarpment, the wild ones won't have anywhere to go. If they blow a hole in my backyard, everyone is gonna run away, won't flow to the great lake below. Will the water in the well still be okay? We'll keep driving on the blind line if we don't know where we wanna go. Even knowledge that sounds watered down, the truth can get sucked out the car window. The truth gets sucked out the car window. We're two-thirds water. What do we really need but sun, shower, soil, and sea? We're two-thirds water. The aquifers provide. Deep down in the rock, there's a pearl inside. Won't flow to the great lake below. Will the water in the well still be okay? If they blow a hole in the backbone, the one that runs across the muscles of the land, oh, we might get a load of stone for the road, but I don't know how much longer we can stand. Oh, we might get a load of stone for the road, but I don't know how much longer we can stand.
And now, back to the debate. Would the world be better off without religion?
That's an interesting bit. Matthew Chapman, are you angry with God?
How can you be angry with something that doesn't exist? I'm angry with Dinesh because he's making these preposterous statements about my great-great-grandfather that are simply not true. His atheism didn't come solely from the fact that his daughter died. It was a very slow process of seeing how the theory of evolution was in conflict with the Bible. And I think the point I would make is let's give the religious people that at some point in history, religion was helpful. But that the texts that these things, that the religions are based upon, are archaic, absurd, cruel, open to interpretation. And frankly, there are better ways of conducting yourself in life. There are. And And I don't buy this argument that we've inherited it from Christianity, because if you look at the sort of evolutionary world, empathy and cooperation and compassion clearly existed before God decided for some unknown reason to intervene after 90,000 years.
David Wolpe, to talk about this question of the text, and you're in an interesting position because in 2001 you gave a talk in which you actually questioned the literal truth of the Exodus story. So you are already not tied
to
the text.
I'm not a literalist, no. But what I find very interesting is the leap that Matthew's making. He says these texts have cruel things. There are better ways to behave. But we're asking not, would the world be better off if you rewrote the Bible, but would the world be better off without the influence that religion has on religious people? And I want to say, in response to what Anthony said, I have the exact opposite experience. I actually think that if you believe that people are fundamentally good, and if you leave them alone, they're just going to be good, then you've never visited a playground. Because my experience is, when a new kid comes to the playground, the other kids don't go, oh, look, a new child. Let us embrace him and share our toys. Actually, children have to be socialized to good. And that work is difficult work and constant work, and that's what religious communities do.
I would like to intervene on this.
All right, very quickly.
This is the viewpoint of a rabbi who does work in an affluent community in Los Angeles. Both these men are very sophisticated. The people I met in Pennsylvania, who 50% of them believe in creationism and are fundamentalist, they're saying we ignore their sophistication. I'm saying they ignore the fact that most of the world is fundamentalist and takes a barbaric view of many of the texts.
If there were no religion, what would be happening in Pennsylvania? In the Pennsylvania situation where the school board wanted an intelligent design taught as an equal alternative to evolution, you've got to specify what the harm is there.
Well, the harm is absolutely enormous. I mean, 50%, I mean, just to be practical about it, 50% of the growth of the American economy since World War II has come from science and technology. And this anti-scientism is gradually eroding America's ability to produce enterprising, educated...
Okay, that's a new point that I want to take to this side. The argument that religious thinking and religious strictures limit science, Galileo, into the future. Go ahead. Dinesh D'Souza.
First of all, if you were to make a list of the 200 greatest scientists of all time, from Newton, Copernicus, Kepler, Pascal, Boyle, the list goes on, you find that the vast, vast majority of them were religious believers. The point I'm trying to get at here is that on the basis of, I would say, a 1% minority of religious rednecks, we have an indictment of all the world's religions as a whole. Nothing could be more crude and shameful than to imply that Athens and Jerusalem, which have given rise to Western civilization, that have shaped our philosophy, our economy, separation of powers, checks and balances, when Thomas Jefferson...
All right, Dinesh, I want to cut you off to late.
on many fronts. But as long as it takes, we will prevail.
Messages from Access Sacramento.